Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists from around the world. My name is Ramesh Vaitalingam, and today's interview is with Nobel laureate Professor Daniel Kahneman of Princeton University. We met at the Centre for Economic Performance in London in October 2008, where Daniel had given the opening presentation at a workshop on happiness research. In his presentation, he made the distinction between living and thinking about it, between what he calls our experiencing self and our remembering self. I began by asking him to explain these ideas and their significance for happiness research.
We keep insisting that there is one notion of happiness and one notion of well-being, and in fact there are, clearly we need more than one notion, and I was arguing today that we need at least two. That is, that there is one kind of measurement that you can obtain by measuring how people feel. And then there is another measurement that you can obtain when you ask people how they think about their life. And I called one of those experience happiness and the other life evaluation. And it turns out that life evaluation and experience happiness are very different determinants, have very different consequences. They're both legitimate parts of well-being. And we need to look at them separately.
Now, you talked about this idea of the focusing illusion. Could you explain that idea in a little more detail?
Well, the other main argument that I was trying to make today is that the notion of attention plays a central role in every aspect of well-being, so that we basically enjoy what we attend to. We do not, if we are in a luxury car but quarreling with our spouse, we're not enjoying ourselves. So what matters is what is in our focal attention. Indeed, you're not better off to be in a luxury car when you're quarreling with your spouse. It does nothing for you. So attention is absolutely critical, and attention is also critical when you think about your life. What is it that you're paying attention to then? And attention, finally, is critical when you're thinking about life in general, so about any aspect of life. So for example, most of us exaggerate the importance of almost anything as a determinant of happiness. So we think that living in a good climate is great. We think that having high income is wonderful, and so on. But in fact, people who live in a good climate very rarely think about it. The focusing illusion is that when we think about people living in a wonderful climate in the United States, we think of California, we can't help but make a terrible mistake, which is we imagine somebody in California with thinking about living in California and enjoying living in California because it's so special. But in fact, the amount of time that people in California spend thinking about how very special California is minute and has essentially no impact on their well-being. So that is the focusing illusion. So without thinking about attention and without thinking about the different aspects of well-being, we really cannot do much. And the first thing that we must learn to give up, I think, is that we can get by with talking about one notion of well-being and that it doesn't matter how we measure it. Turns out, it matters a lot, and different measurements lead us to very different conclusions.
So this has implications for the way we ask questions when we conduct surveys, trying to find out about people's happiness or well-being or life satisfaction.
Oh, absolutely. Every survey will tend to direct your attention to different aspects of life. So, for example, if you ask people, you tell them, here is a ladder of life, and 10 is the best life you could have, and 0 is the worst life you could have. People give you a very objective assessment, basically, of their material circumstances. And they give you an assessment that is very much the same in Togo and in Denmark. They seem to apply the same standard for what is a very good life. When you ask people a question like, how satisfied are you with your life these days? You're asking a different question. You're asking them, in a way, what emotion does it arouse in you when you think about your life? Which is not the same thing as what emotions you experience when you're living. and is not the same thing as the judgment you make when you're asked, where do you fit on the ladder of life? So each question focuses the attention of people on different aspects of well-being, and the fact that we've been using these questions indiscriminately has been a major obstacle to progress in our research.
And then presumably this has implications for the way we treat people's unhappiness, or the way we think about public policy and approaching trying to make people happy.
Certainly. One question is, for example, which kind of happiness are you most interested in promoting and developing? Is it the happiness of the experiencing self, or is it the happiness of the remembering self, like making people more satisfied with their lives? A lot of what we call positive psychology, those are interventions that are basically designed to make people more satisfied with their lives. Now, that can be very good, but it is not at all the same thing as making them happier as they live. And there is a lot of confusion about that, so that it's quite essential, I think, to know which aspect of well-being we're thinking about. Another very significant issue with respect to policy is that when we focus on experience, we are drawn to focus on misery, and rightly so. And it turns out that some people in society suffer much more than others. Suffering is distributed very unequally. Mentally ill people suffer dreadfully. People with physical pain suffer dreadfully. And focusing on physical pain and depression as objective for policy is a direct consequence of one way of thinking about well-being.
Do we have enough data at the moment to be able to distinguish between experienced happiness and evaluated well-being, and then what the drivers are and what the outcomes are arising
from
that?
This line of research is developing very rapidly, so that we know, for example, that aspects of material well-being are extremely important to life evaluation. When you ask people to evaluate their lives, they don't think of their spiritual well-being primarily. They think of their material well-being. On the other hand, we know that the affect that people experience within a population depends a great deal on social relationships. That people are a lot happier if they spend a lot of time with people. That people in a nation are a lot happier if they can trust strangers. So we have that wonderful set of questions, and there are also experiments where it's called the lost wallet experiment, where you can drop a wallet with an address and see whether it's likely to be returned. And there are large differences between countries in the likelihood that a wallet will be returned. And these are correlated with the level of corruption in countries, and they're also correlated with the level of experienced happiness in countries. And countries where the level of trust is higher, at any given level of GDP, tend to be happier countries.
Now, you said that your view of this whole area of well-being has changed a great deal over the last 10 years. What do you see as the agenda going forward? What are the big questions that we need to address and the ways we need to go about researching it?
Well, I have changed my views so much that prognostications about the future are very risky. What you can see is what appears to be interesting at the moment, and it's very clear at the moment that the interface of well-being research and health research is one absolutely critical area, and that the determinants, the complicated connections between the happiness of the remembering self, what we think about our life, and the happiness of the experiencing self, and their health consequences, that is setting up a problem that currently is open, but where I think research is going to make major advances in the next decade.
Daniel Kahneman, thank you very much.